Good morning. My name is John Smetanka, and the name of our program is With Respect. Today's guest on With Respect is John Brinker. John is a businessman, but more to the point today, he is a mentor of athletes. We're going to be talking about athletics and business and people with John Brinker. We'll be right back. John, how are you this morning?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you for asking, John.
Good. John, first of all, where are you from originally?
I was born in Evansville, Indiana.
All right. Now, a Hoosier is now in Michigan. How long have you been here?
My wife and our three children moved up from the St. Louis area in 1998, so over 12 years.
What brought you up here?
Worked for Michigan Pizza Hut. We have all of the Pizza Huts in the area and actually all the way up to the UP. So they kind of recruited me, and now I run the company for them as a chief operating officer.
Uh-huh. So pizza.
Yes.
All right, is my downfall. It is my absolute downfall.
I'm glad to hear that, John.
because I like it so much that it stays with me. It stays right around my waist.
No, not necessarily. It doesn't have to.
Doesn't have to?
You might have to just get a little more active for the consumption ratio that you have going.
All right. I used to be an athlete. Now I feel like I'm just a slug. But seriously, John, today I want to talk with you about your avocation, which was athletics. How long have you been an athlete?
Boy, as long back as I can remember, I started swimming competitively when I was 9 years old, swam all through grade school, high school, college, and then have stayed with that sport and ventured into the world of triathlons back in 1985.
So you've been at it for quite a while.
Quite a while.
So swimming was your first love?
Actually, baseball was, but I got cut from the Little League team because the coach said I had a bad attitude.
Really?
Yeah, I was nine. I didn't even know what an attitude was.
What did he object to? Did you smart off to
No, him? I didn't do a thing. It was actually because while the tryouts were going on, I was in center field with about 15 other boys, and I remember his name. His name was Brad Harrison, was to get three hits of the ball being pitched to him, and Brad was struggling to get those three hits, and after about 20 minutes, I guess I got a little bored. I might have sat down in the outfield. And when it came time for the call of names to come back the following day, my name wasn't mentioned. And, you know, I thought I had done pretty well. I'd hit my three balls in three pitches, so I thought I was a shoo-in for the team. And he didn't call my name, and I went up to him, and I said, Coach, I'm sorry, I might have missed hearing my name called. And he looked at me, and he said, Brinker, you're just not cut out for team sports. We believe you have a bad attitude. You didn't support other team players when they were batting, and you won't be asked back. I was devastated, absolutely devastated. Well, I remember it so well that I'm telling you now.
Yeah.
So I got on my bicycle, rode home, and my mom asked me what time practice was the next day, and I said, Mama, I'm not going back. They didn't invite me back. I guess I got cut from the team. And she looked at me and she said, "That's okay. I'll take you to join the swim team."
Whoa.
And the very next day, instead of trying out for the Little League team, I started swimming, and I haven't looked back since. It was probably the best thing that could have happened, because it's a sport that I've had tremendous enjoyment with.
Well, but let me back up, because my sport was baseball, and I was lucky because I had some skills that allowed me to carry through, and they were just starting the Little League team, and they were desperate for players. So they couldn't cut me because there was there's eight players.
I tell this story to people, and everyone tells me they don't cut people from Little League, and I am here to tell you that
they
absolutely
do.
I was cut from the Little League team.
But you know, that's interesting, because whether it's in athletics or in some other part of life, when you have an experience like that, especially as a young kid, first of all, it sticks with you. Secondly, it changes your life. But thirdly, you have to adopt a skill, or probably exercise a skill, of getting beyond the rejection. And that can be, especially for a kid, the hardest thing, it seems to me.
Oh, it was. So, the next day when I showed up to go out for the swim team, because it was early in the summer, I didn't own a swimsuit like, the swim team had, and mm-hmm. I was just swimming, and all of a sudden, I guess I just connected with the water and enjoyed it, and have continued to enjoy it for, my goodness, a lot of years. But I understand what you're saying about the rejection part. And now I laugh about it. But no, I really was. It hurt. But I learned a valuable lesson, too.
Well,
and I'm not going to say I wasn't, maybe I should have been cut. Well, I was cut. So.
Well, I there are experiences in my life where I had the same shocking experience, and where it stuck with me. So I can, in my mind, I can run through the movie, the newsreel of my life, and I can say, "Ooh, I remember that.
Right.
Ooh, that was awful." And in fact, regarding baseball, one time I've told this story in the show before, but I had a bad experience. I got distracted when I was pitching a game of baseball, when we could have gone to the Nationals, and we had this great team, and I got distracted, and I let two people hit home runs. I never, ever, ever have forgotten that. It wasn't the last of my baseball days, but what it was is it taught me to pay attention to what I was doing and not get distracted during when I was supposed to be engaged in a team effort, and I was the pitcher.
Right.
I let myself get distracted and didn't want to ever do it again. I learned it again when I was in court one time when I was a baby attorney. And the attorney that I was appearing against was extremely well known in the area, a very good trial lawyer. And I ended up getting so distracted by being against this and trying to beat this guy, this attorney, that I lost my case. And had I realized before I went into it that you need to keep focused and done that, I would have, the case would have been easy. But I was too proud. Anyhow, but ever since then, I've never made that mistake.
Sure.
So you learn from these things. So you became a swimmer.
Yes.
Where did you swim from 9 years old? Did you compete?
Well, actually, the schools did not have a swim program, so there was a program called AAU, and mm-hmm. it was the AAU Swimming Association that we participated in, and we practiced pretty much 10 months out of the year. We had a winter season, we had a summer season. And did that all through grade school, continued to do that all through high school. and then actually swam in college for DePaul University, located down in Greencastle, Indiana. Mm-hmm. So it was a Division III school, so you didn't have the pressure of having to swim. You swam because that's what you enjoyed doing.
Mm-hmm. Who was your coach?
Which time?
Down at DePaul.
DePaul, we had a young man actually who came from our hometown, and his name was Fred Creech. He was one of our coaches, and then, you know, when we became a senior, I hate to say this, I can't even remember who the coach was at that time.
Was there a person in your developing years that you can say, this person in athletics had the biggest influence on me?
In swimming, there's no question it was Mr. Barnes.
Tell me about him.
Mr. Barnes was a neighbor who had three boys. They all swam, and basically recruited me to swim for the AAU team because I'd just been swimming at the local pool. And he was a individual who was very imposing, did not allow any harsh play. I mean, very strict. The workouts were just brutal. Mm-hmm. But it's somebody that I look back on, and because of the discipline that he demanded on the team, I believe I've been able to carry that with me and probably do things that I wouldn't have been able to do without that influence in my life, you know, being so young also. Mm-hmm.
Well, did that person's influence on your life, was it just confined to swimming, or did it go to the rest of your life as well?
You know, sometimes there's a gray area of you don't know what gets transferred over from one lesson to the next. But I would have to say that, you know, he taught me a lot. I'm not going to go down a list and tell you everything he taught me because, you know, time has a way of erasing some of the memory. Mm-hmm. But just those impactful moments, I can still see him sitting in the lifeguard stand when it was 48 degrees and he made us swim and it was 48 degrees in an unheated swimming pool and we just hated every minute. And the more we complained, the more yards we had to swim. So we learned real quickly, you don't complain. You just do the workout as designed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember I had a coach in Pony League baseball, and I remembered him not just because he was my coach or even the best coach that I ever had, but I remember him not so much for the baseball, but I remember him I learned from him the importance of an adult figure in a young person's life, i.e., I had a great deal of respect for the man. And I learned, and he kind of filled in the blanks. That is, I had about three or four male figures in my life who I respected, my dad, my uncles, and him. And he gave this image of somebody who was interested in young people. He had three daughters, but he coached boys baseball. And he taught me to respect anybody who could relate to kids and to do it in a way that was productive, that is, develop the kids well. I mean, unfortunately, we have so many images floating around in our society today about people who, if they have a relationship with a kid, it's not good. It's pedophiles or priests that get carried away with themselves. But and on the other hand, we also have images of people, kids, adults who don't want to have anything to do with the kids. You know, sort of the W.C. Fields, get away from me, son, you bother me. But people like him and my dad and my uncles were able to convince me or to show me that adults and young people have a relationship, and that relationship goes beyond simply being a coach. You learn from them about life. That's my rant on the beginning of my view of mentoring. We're going to come back and talk to you about this idea of mentoring in a minute, but I want to take a break. We're talking to John Brinker, who is the Chief Operating Officer of Michigan Pizza Hut, but also is a triathlete and a mentor. We'll be right back. We're now back with John Brinker, athlete, mentor, and CEO, COO of Michigan Pizza Hut. John, when we broke, I just was talking about the people, the men in my life that had a positive influence on me, and I mentioned three or four of them. And then there's others, priests who are great teachers or great people or and whatnot, other odds and ends people I've met. But I want to hone in on you were an athlete, a swimmer in college, and it was brutal. This man just destroyed your free time. All right. But you came out of it. And what did you do? What did you do with this swimming after you left college?
Actually, I took a break. I took a break probably for 7 years as I got married, started a career, and stayed active, stayed fit, but was not, competing in any capacity as far as swimming or running or anything like that. Then when I was 30 years old, which would have been way back in 1984, I started to hear of this new sport called a triathlon. And it was a combination of swimming, biking, and running. And I had done some biking in college, had also done some running, cross-country running on the team and such. And it's like, well, I could probably string all three of those sports together and maybe I'd be okay at this. So I started talking to my wife and telling her that I was going to do this. And we lived in the St. Louis area at the time. And there was a triathlon that was going to be in June of that year. And I started saying, oh, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. Well, I guess I procrastinated long enough that when I went to actually sign up for the triathlon, which would have been probably February, it was already sold out.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's like, okay, well, maybe next year. And continued, not to compete, swim a little bit, do some riding. But, it was just all for fun. And then I started talking about it again toward the end of that year, saying, okay, now this year I'm going to sign up before they sell out. And my birthday came around, and I opened up what I thought was a box with a shirt in it, and inside was a signed and accepted and filled out registration form for the triathlon. And my wife looked at me and she said, quit talking about it and start training because you are entered in the race. And, that has been a savior for me quite often when she says, are you going to go on a 5-hour bike ride again? I said, hey, you got me in this sport. So anyway, I did that first triathlon in June of 1985. Because I had a swimming background, I got out of the water in very good position, got on my bike, which was not a triathlon bike at all. It was just a regular old bicycle that you pulled out of your garage and you started, you know, riding. And I mean, had no clue how to race a triathlon at all. You know, was doing okay and holding my own. Not too many people passed me. And I said, well, this triathlon thing, that's not that hard. And the distance was a mile swim, a 35-mile bike, and then a 10K run. So I got through the swim okay, got through the bike in great position. I think someone yelled, you were ninth overall getting off the bike out of 600 people. And I go, wow. Well, this is great. This is so easy. Then the run came. And oh, my gosh, I think I turned that run into a death march. And, you know, while you're out there and you now start seeing all of these people that you had already passed start passing you, you know, it's a humbling experience. And I'd walk, and you know, I eventually crossed the line, and I forget exactly where my place was, but I think I dropped about 40 spots, you know, on the run. So maybe I was in the top 50, I don't know. But I crossed the line, and I went to my wife, I gave her a big hug and a kiss, told her thank you for, you know, entering me in the race. And she goes, you think you'll do another one? Well, that was over 200 triathlons ago. Ooh. So, yeah, I've done quite a few since then.
Well, now, we've talked to one of your proteges, Andrea Hutchins, and she's talked to us about the different kinds of triathlons, or from the sprint triathlon to the Olympic triathlon, the half Ironman, and the Ironman. Now, there's a wide range.
Absolutely.
In terms of the amount of skill and determination you have to go through those. What have you focused on? How many have you done the full Ironman?
I have.
And have you done it out at Kona?
I have.
And how did you do out there?
You know, it was probably the most rewarding experience of my life. Never thought I would ever be able to qualify. Did not know if I had, you know, the ability to be able to qualify. It's very, very competitive. There are very limited spots in each one of the age groups, and I was lucky enough on my fourth attempt to qualify. So that means I had done three other Ironmans. On my fourth attempt, I qualified out in Lake Placid, mm-hmm. at the Ironman out there. And I knew I had to get top three to qualify to go to Kona. And at that time, I had hired a coach because I was very determined to achieve my goal, which was to race Kona. It's the holy grail of triathlons. And he told me the day before, as he you know, prepped me mentally, because more than anything, once you've done your homework physically, you've done your long rides, you've done your long runs, you've put in the swims, you've got your nutrition dialed in, you have to be mentally prepared for that day. It's a long day. And he said, John, I just want to let you know that tomorrow's race will not be won by the fastest person in your age group. It will be won by the person that gets to the finish line first.
Oh.
And I, you know, kind of said, Jeff, what do you mean? You have to be the fastest person to get to the finish line first. He goes, no, not necessarily. You have to be the smartest person to get to the finish line first. You have to execute the race plan flawlessly. You have to trust your fitness level, and above all, have confidence in your ability to win. And sure enough, I was able to win my age group, which guaranteed me, you know, my ticket being punched to go to Hawaii. But at times, I was behind. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were guys who were ahead of me. And at one point, with 6 miles to go, I was in third place. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened that it was an out-and-back course, so I knew how far ahead of them or ahead of me they were. And I had to dig very, very deep to to try to catch them. And then when I went by the first guy, you kind of take an assessment of how they're feeling. And regardless of how you're feeling, you have to project a feeling of strength and confidence, and they cannot see any weakness in you, even though it hurts like heck. So you go strong by them, and hopefully that mentally breaks them. And then there was only one guy left out there for me to track down, and I was able to pass him with about 2 miles to go in the marathon. And then there was a big hill that we had to run up as we re-entered the village of Lake Placid. And I ran scared for the next 2 miles until I was until I crossed that finish line. So then, you know, when you go to Hawaii, it's almost like, you know, the proverbial icing on the cake. I did not have any grandiose expectations to win that race. It was the first time I'd ever gone to Hawaii. I just wanted to make sure. And I told Andrea, one of the gals that that I've kind of helped, you know, improve her skill set of in triathlons. I said, above all, what you have to do when you're in Hawaii is make sure you cross that finish line, you get that T-shirt, and you get that finisher's medal. Everything else after that, that's just a bonus. Now, number two, when you go back, we'll have a little bit higher expectations. But that first one, make sure you get that finisher's T-shirt.
Now, you got your finisher's T-shirt the first time?
I did.
And did you go back?
I did.
How often have you gone back?
I went back the following year. So I went back in 04 and 05. And then I just decided to take a break because by at that time I had done four Ironmans in less than 16 months.
That's a lot.
And that's a lot of training. That's a lot of sacrifices from your family. When you train for the full distance of an Ironman, it is a part-time job. It's a 20-hour week, you know, of nothing but training. Not every week is 20 hours, but by the time you include, you know, all of the things that you have to do according to the training plan, and then you're always tired. And, you know, it's a big sacrifice from the family when you're training at that level.
All right. I want to talk about mentoring later, but can you tell us, what is it that makes you want to go through all of this? What is it? Now, don't tell me, or you can tell me about dopamine and all the things that your body develops to make you feel good at the end, the runner's high. But from what I've seen and what you describe, I see people falling on the ground as they're coming across or not making it to the finishing line. So it's not all, you know, hip-hop happy. It's pain. Why do you do it?
I would have to say one of the primary reasons of why I enjoy putting myself through that pain is because I want to challenge myself and to do something that the vast majority of people can't even fathom. I take a lot of pleasure out of knowing that I can do this when other people wouldn't even consider it. And some
you're
even,
sitting across the table from someone like that.
and it's not to show somebody that I might be better than them, but it's simply a personal challenge. If somebody says, why do you do that, or how can you do that, it's because I can, if you are determined enough to do it. I'm an individual where I believe process and discipline can achieve great results, but you have to be able to endure the process, and you have to have the discipline to go out there and do what's expected of you. And I'm very strict on myself. I'll beat myself up when I feel I've had a bad race, and I have to dissect it to find out where I went wrong. And I have to learn from my mistakes. And I enjoy that. I mean, maybe it's a little sick, but I absolutely enjoy putting myself through a certain
self-analysis.
Yeah, absolutely.
And at
I love to debrief after a race.
And if you win, do you win or do you just finish?
Well, there's two ways that I tell people that are getting in the sport when they get up to the half Ironman and the full Ironman. You can either race to complete or you can race to compete. I never race to complete. I always have to race to compete.
And have you competed to the top?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to take a break now. We're talking to John Brinker about athletics, about his own experience with the triathlon and what it means to him and how it interrelates to his own personality. We're going to come back and talk about his views about other people as well. We're talking to John, triathlete, COO of Michigan Pizza Hut. We'll be right back. We're now back with John Brinker, talking about the triathlon and about his own experiences and motivations. But John, you've gone beyond, if you will, just training yourself and competing yourself. You know, the loneliness of the long-distance runner is really, you know, it's a name of a book, but it's also a way of life. You can continue to compete in life and never relate to anybody else. It's just you. It's you and the distance, or you and the bike, or whatever it is. But you've gone to a different level, and that is you've decided to work with other people. Well, how did you get doing that?
Well, first off, I feel that there is a tremendous obligation on my part to give back to a sport that has given me so much enjoyment. And when I first started, training and working out to compete in triathlons, I was riding a bike with a person who was about 10 years older than me, who had done triathlons for a couple years before I even knew there were triathlons. And we were out on a ride, and he goes, "John, I know you're going to be in this sport for a long time. I can see the passion that you have for the sport. You enjoy it. You have fun. You know, you're successful in it. What I would like for you to do someday, though, is 10, 15 years after you've taken a lot of enjoyment out of the sport, give back to that sport." And I'll just never forget that bike ride that he basically challenged me. And I love challenges.
That's a dangerous challenges thing with John Brinker. He wants challenges.
I do love challenges. And, you know, there was a time when I was first starting out that if I found something that worked for me, it was one of those, well, maybe I'll just keep it as a secret. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't share when people would ask me, you know, well, what do you do to compete in, you know, the Olympic triathlon distance? And, you know, I would tell them maybe 90% because I was afraid maybe if I gave them the whole, you know, 100%, that they would beat me. But that probably wasn't the best thing for me to do. But at the time, you know, that was my mentality. And I've long past that, where now I take more enjoyment out of seeing other people be successful. And if I played even the smallest role in having them achieve that level of success that maybe exceeded what they even thought was possible out of themselves, I just find it so rewarding. So, the need to race all the time isn't there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I will race. I'll race for enjoyment. I will compete. I'll give it everything I have. But I would assume just stand at the finish line and cheer, those athletes that I've had a small part in helping across the line. Just a cool feeling.
Well, it is whenever you give back in any part of life, the person who does that always talks afterwards about how they get more out of it than the person that they've given it to.
At least in my particular situation.
Yeah.
Absolutely, no question.
And I've people ask, I teach, and what's so interesting about teaching? Why do you keep doing it? And I say, because I learn more about the law or whatever I'm talking about. I learn more than I give. And it's also there's something inside your soul which expands and gives you pleasure when you've given something to someone else.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more, John. I absolutely believe that. And you mentioned teaching, and in a lot of ways, that's what I feel like I do. I feel like more that I'm a teacher than I ever am a coach.
Mm-hmm.
I just take great pleasure out of that.
All right. Well, let's talk about that for a minute. Now, you've taught, or you've mentored, and I keep using that word.
That's
mentor.
A pretty powerful name. I don't know if I deserve that or not.
Well, how do you understand the word mentor?
Well, I know what you mean, and yes, I am.
Oh, okay.
But it's just a powerful word to have somebody say that, you are my mentor. Maybe that's just a responsibility that sometimes you go, no, you did it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I just helped you pull those pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
It's you that accomplished it. So,
well, we talk about mentoring maybe too loosely in our society. We talk about when getting into the business world, well, he is my mentor or she is my mentor or whatever. And we just toss that word out. But it really has a powerful, subtext to it, which obviously is what you're thinking about when you're struggling with identifying yourself as a mentor. But It involves not just being a teacher. In other words, teaching a particular skill. Say, all right, today I'm going to teach you about a stroke in your crawl in swimming. Your arm needs to dig deeper into the water and pull back harder.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because just yesterday, as part of our swim workout, I allowed 15 minutes for stroke analysis.
Yeah.
And I made everyone swim individually while their peers critiqued their stroke.
Ooh, brutal.
And I even allowed them to critique mine.
Ooh,
so,
double brutal.
What's good for the students, good for the teacher, I guess.
That requires a great deal of humility, John.
Yeah, absolutely.
But now, mentoring goes beyond even that sort of self-criticism or criticism by peers, or setting up the process by which self-analysis and self-criticism and peer criticism goes. Mentoring goes beyond that. What else do you see in mentoring?
Well, to me, I believe you have to be a role model. I mean, if you say that this is what you're asking them to do, then you have to have been able to do it yourself. Maybe not to the same level that they did. Maybe they're better than you.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have experience in that. I think you have to have earned respect from the person that you are, guiding and coaching and leading. Obviously, most everyone's mentor in one way or the other was either their father or their mother.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we learn so many life lessons, from your parents. And hopefully everyone's had that opportunity to be close to their parents. And I know the lessons that I learned from my father. So if you ask me who my number one mentor was, I'm going to tell you it's my father.
Mm-hmm.
He taught me my work ethic. He taught me so many other things about life. And you don't even know sometimes you're being taught a lesson. until later on in life, and it just becomes you. I mean, that's your makeup. That's your personality. That's who you are. So as far as my purpose of being a mentor toward the people that I'm working with now, I genuinely believe that they are getting something from me, and that mm-hmm. makes me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
They ask a lot of questions, and I'm honest with them. The first thing I told them when I started working with them is, I am not a coach. I am a non-coach. Mm. And at any time you believe you need a real coach, one that you can take you farther in what you're trying to achieve, you will not hurt my feelings,
mm-hmm.
By moving on. And I encourage that. And, one of the young ladies, Andrea Hutchins, who just did Hawaii this past year, I've told her that several times. I said, you might have outgrown me. You might need to seek someone that has more experience, more knowledge than I can give you. And if that day comes, Andrea, you have to go, because you have that ability. You have the capability to be very, very good in this sport. So, mentors, you can outgrow that mentor, and then maybe find another mentor too. So mm-hmm. I don't think you're just given one mentor. You might have 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, but they're all in different capacities.
But the... I don't want to beat this too much, because you made this distinction between being a coach, and I use the word teacher, and then this other word is mentor. There's something more that the mentor gives than the coach does, than the teacher does, or it's something in addition. And I'm trying to fix on that, because, and let me explain why I'm pushing for this. People in all walks of life, whether it's politics, law, business, whatever it is, success is determined not only by latent physical or even mental skills, but there's a motivation factor there. And that's where I see this mentoring as a crucial part of people's development, and you're touching on it, but I'm perplexed. I'm perplexed. What is it that you give to the people that you work with now? You talk about their teaching about their strokes. Okay, that's fine. But what more do you give them? What do you tell these people?
I think that you absolutely have to have a passion for whatever you're trying to transfer to another individual. If you don't have a passion for, the sport of triathlons, they can see that in you. They can pick up on that. So you have to have, this commitment. The other thing I think you have to have is you have to be able to relay the fact that in whatever you do, you have to have balance in your life. So when I am working with, these younger people, and some of them are, a third of my age, which keeps me young, and that's, that's a byproduct of this. I keep continuing to tell them, though, you can be as good as you want to be, but unless you have balance in your life, then it's not as rewarding as what it should be. So I think a mentor has to have a lot of facets, not only the ability to teach them something new each day, not only the ability to, go and encourage them when they need to be encouraged, but you also have to be able to display that this is something you genuinely love to do. I don't think you could be a mentor and somebody pick up on that if you're not have fallen in love with what you're trying to teach them.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's my opinion.
So passion is
absolutely
one thing.
I believe that.
Without it, you can't give it.
I believe that.
Ability to transfer passion. So that deals with communication skills. Somehow you've got to be able to not just have your passion, but also to communicate it, to transfer it.
Well, you can't, I mean, you can't just tell them what to do and expect them to do it. You have to be able to give them the reasons why to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, you know, sometimes they struggle. Sometimes they reach a barrier where they don't see increased performance and they've been working very, very hard. So you have to be compassionate also. So, you know, you're there in a lot of different ways supporting them in different arenas of you know, whatever you're teaching them, giving them support. And, you know, right now we have about 9 people, you know, in our group that mm-hmm. that have asked me, because I'm not a coach. And the mm-hmm. reason I say I'm not a coach, John, is because most coaches might be paid mm-hmm. in the sport of triathlon if you did what, you know, I was doing. I told them, the only payment I want is to see, you know, 100% effort 100% of the time, because I'm not going to waste my time if you're not fully committed to this.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have some ground rules, and you know, to all of them, all 9 of them, I'm probably not a mentor, but to a select few that really have that passion and mm-hmm. really want to take it to the next level, maybe I am. But mm-hmm. I've never asked them, never will ask them. I just have too much fun seeing them each day, you know, get better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very, very, very rewarding. And most of them haven't even touched, come close to where their ability can take them.
We're going to take a break again now. We're talking to John Brinker, who is a businessman. He is also a triathlete, has competed at Kona in Hawaii, the ultimate event for triathletes, and he's now a mentor, teacher, whatever, of others. We'll be right back. We're now back with John Brinker. John, when we broke, we talked about what it is that you convey and what you get out of it. Now, you mentioned that there's 9 people that you work with. How did the 9 find you? And what? Tell me about a week or a day of your working with these people. What do they do?
Well, it starts way before the week starts, because what I do for them is I lay out a training plan for them. But before that, we'll basically have, and I'll just refer to it as a team meeting. We're not a team,
mm-hmm.
but we could be a team. It's a group meeting. And we just held ours for this year a couple weeks ago, and I gave them an assignment. I wanted to know what their biggest success was that they accomplished in 2010, their most rewarding moment that they had in 2010.
Just in athletics or in life?
Well, I left it open.
Okay.
They all thought I meant just athletics, so all the answers, you know, were that. I had different answers for some of the people because I think that they kind of shortchanged themselves. One got married, and she's talking about her biggest success was crossing the finish line at the Whirlpool Steelhead Half Ironman, and I'm going, no, you got married. Don't you think that could be the highlight of the year? But anyway, you know, maybe they thought that they had to stay in the same theme of triathlons. And then if you had to do anything over, what would your do-over be? So anyway, we prepare for the season, and then I sit down and I start writing training plans. And each person has maybe a different, what I refer to as an A race. An A race is that one race. You might race 6 times in 1 year, but you have one race that you want to peak for. And I need to know what that is, because if you peak too soon, then you're not going to have your best race on your A race. So I need to know that, and I build the training plans around that. But a typical week, to answer your original question, would be we swim Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We meet at the pool at 5:45 in the morning. We swim till 7. We quickly get dressed, then we go do weightlifting. On Wednesdays, we'll weightlift our upper body, and that might last for an hour, and then we'll do cardio. If we have the time, we'll either do treadmill or outside or whatever. Tuesdays and Thursdays right now, because it's what I refer to as base training, where we're just laying down a hardcore base of training, trying to keep our heart rate low, because what you want to do is be able to train your body to work more efficiently at a lower heart rate. Because with the distance that we are competing at, you don't want to allow yourself to go anaerobic and dip into your reserves, your glycogen, too much, where you only have a limited supply. You've got to train your body to use fat for fuel. So this is the base training. So Tuesdays and Thursdays are all legs, meaning we lift legs heavy for 2 to 2.5 hours, all different types of exercises, building our lower body up for the pounding that it's going to take on the runs and the rides that come later, although, you know, we're still running each day. So right now the average athlete is probably training anywhere from 12 to 15 hours. Then we get into our phase two of the training, which would be more around the March time period, when we can get outside, start incorporating the longer bike rides that begin at 2 hours and will cap out in the summer at 7 hours for the long rides, for those that are training for the Ironman. Your long runs will top out at about 22 miles for one run, and that's with five other runs throughout the week. 1 week dedicated to track training and fartlek training and so on and so forth. And then you're swimming, you know, 10,000 yards a week. So when we're in full throttle of training, it's more like 17 to 20 hours a week of actual moving your body. That's not driving to the gym. That's not taking a shower. Mm-hmm. That's not cleaning up. So like I say, it's a huge time commitment on the athlete. It's a tremendous sacrifice on everyone's family. And that's where, when I mentioned earlier about trying to teach balance, you can't get so involved in the sport that you lose touch with the, you know, reality. Mm-hmm. and those people that love you, because those are the people that are sacrificing even more than you. You're doing what you enjoy. Mm-hmm. They're waiting for you to come home. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm.
and they are giving up the time with you that, for example, a woman or a man married to get this part, a part of that person, other person's life.
Yeah.
And if you deprive them of that, it's pretty
absolutely,
you're cheating them.
You have to include them in as much as you can, and they have to enjoy watching you do what you love to do.
Well, it we talk in the law. The law is a jealous mistress. It sounds very much like
it's very.
So is the triathlon.
Similar, very similar. Yeah, unfortunately, it's this way it is.
What do you see in the people that you've worked? Now, we've had Andrea Hutchins here as a guest, and you made passing mention that she is capable of doing better than she is doing now.
No, she's new to the sport. She's only been in the sport. This will be her third full season, and I believe she's got untapped potential. Mm-hmm. You know, she is just a tremendous athlete. She's got the willpower. She's got the drive. She's got she's the real deal. Mm-hmm. And I think she could perform at even a higher level you know, given the fact that she's mid-30s now, limits her on saying, okay, I'm going to go pro. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's what she wants to do, but I think if she was 25, it would have definitely been something that she would have considered, and I think that she could have competed at that level. But she's that good.
Mm. That's interesting because, you know, we look on this show for people in our area who have special gifts or special achievements that we can talk about and maybe prompt others to realize that we've got a lot going in this area, some very talented people.
A lot of people.
And to it makes us better to associate with those kinds of people because it gives motivation.
Absolutely.
And now, your business.
Yes.
Your business of pizza. Now, we started off with you're trying to convince me that I can't eat as much pizza as I want without turning into a complete slug.
Everything in moderation, John.
Well, that's what I take. That's my attitude on exercise now,
John. Everything in moderation.
Moderation, yeah. But at any rate, I think everybody wants to see some whether there's spillover between different parts of their lives. And I think that we see it on the negative side, that if you're having a bad day at home, it spills over into your work and vice versa. But on the other side, if you have a good day at home or a good day at work, you know, there should be an upwards cycle here, a reinforcing cycle. Do you see that in your work, that your exercise program, your triathlon work, helps you in business?
No question. Before I ever get to my office, I have already done more probably in one morning than most people will do in a week, mm-hmm. as far as working out. So when I hit the door or, you know, and enter the office, I am just ready to go. I am set up for a fantastic day. I very rarely have a bad day because I just stay very, very positive. I love what I do. You know, I love my job. I love my pastime, which is, you know, triathlons. Got a great family, and
Is your wife a runner or a triathlete?
She has. She's done 4 or 5 marathons. She's done, you know, maybe 10 triathlons. She got tired of standing at the finish line waiting for me, and she said, "I can do that." And sure enough, she did. So I got to commend her on that. She's a good athlete. Our kids are very active also.
How old are your kids?
We have one that's a junior in college, one who is a senior in high school, and then a boy who's a freshman in high school.
And are they all competitive athletes?
I would say the girls are athletes. I'm not so sure that they have the competitive gene that I have. I think they have the camaraderie gene where they just they like being surrounded with their friends who are on the team. And, you know, it's funny because they've done some triathlons themselves, but I don't see any of them following in their father's footsteps.
Many years ago, I was on a beach at Fort Lauderdale, and I was about to do a 1 mile swim, the annual swim. There's about 600 to 800 young swimmers. It was at Christmas time, and I remember when I say young, from 8 years to 85.
Wow, that's great.
And it was great. Now, I had to make a decision in my own personal life as to what I was going to do with my career after that. But I decided to compete. I got there, and I looked around at these people, and I saw happy people. Happy in the sense that they were doing what they wanted to do. They were physically in great shape. And I decided that, you know, I like the camaraderie of successful people. And by successful, I don't mean how much money you make.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean it, how much you put into life, and how much that you do the best you can, whatever it is. I find that's interesting. So when I hear people like yourself and Andrea Hutchins, who's been on our show, talk about your passion, even though it's something that's today beyond me, I think, it's very impressive, and I wanted to have both of you on to talk about this sport and about your relative experiences. So, John Brinker, thank you very much. It's been a most enjoyable interview, discussion with you, and I wish you luck in the future with your mentors, mentees, and yourself.
Well, John, I appreciate you having me, and it's been fun talking to you also.
Great.
Thank you much.
The name of our program is With Respect. We're on every Sunday morning at 11 and every Thursday morning at 10. Remember, if you show respect, respect will be shown to you.